Good afternoon, welcome to the We Have a Meeting podcast, Trench Tips. I'm your host, Jack David Frimpston, joined by
Zach Jonathan Thompson.
Thank you, Zach.
Why are we
Jonathan
starting it so
Thompson?
Low and sexy?
I just wanted to have a bit of a sexy voice today, and I hope there's nothing wrong with that in 2025.
Nothing.
So we are, contrary to popular belief, we are friends. In the real world, we're not just podcast friends, and we have lots of conversations. We talk about lots and lots of different things, and I've noticed a theme in some of our recent chats. And I've not prompted you for this, so I'm gonna let you guess. And it's not Game of Thrones because I'm watching Game of Thrones for the first time. What might the theme be today? Do you think? Let's see how smart you are, Mr. Thompson.
Resilience.
That's great. It's not, but it could be linked to resilience. I'll give you one more stab.
Oh, broader.
Maybe. It's a very specific thing.
Oh.
Mindset's not too broader, but mind no.
The opposite of
broader. Right, let me just tell you. I've been thinking about like reframing. Okay.
Oh, cool.
So you were talking about that question that we might get into that you were thinking about when it comes to journaling. So I've found five different reframing techniques. I'm going to chuck them at you and we can discuss, and you could say whether that would work, whether that wouldn't work, whether you like it, where's best to use it. But let's see. Are you ready for the first one?
I've not prepared at all, so yeah, hit me.
Good. The first one is, I'm a speck of dust on a floating rock.
Oh, very nice. That's maximizing bird's eye view of the problem. And do you know what that's called in psychology?
I do. That is called cognitive dissonance.
Cognitive distancing.
That was it. It was on the tip of my tongue.
Cognitive dissonance is usually like inability to see yourself as you actually are.
Yeah, yeah.
Cognitive distancing, what you're talking about there, is that can you see things from a bird's eye view? And there are other ways of doing that as well, you know.
Go on.
And in CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, I thought this was really cool. You know, when people are worried about a certain moment, like speaking on stage or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm worried about speaking on stage, like tripping over my words. A cognitive behavioral therapist will go, and then what would happen? Well, then I'll be fluffing around to gather my papers. Okay, and then what would happen? Well, then I'll probably gather them and then deep breath and recompose. And then, okay, and then what would happen? Well, then I'll probably just get through that. And before you know it, you've distanced yourself so much from the bit that made you feel anxious that you are now back to feeling okay again.
Yeah. I love the idea of like getting, and this is therapy all over, but it's like being specific with it. I've always said like one of the thoughts that will probably come into your head is like, I'm worried what people will think. Pick one. Pick a person then. Who are you worried about? And then like, let's break that down. Why are you worried about them? I love that one. That I talk about it a few times, but that video where it's like zooming out from Earth and you're like, oh, what? I'm moaning because my TV is on a slant. I'm in a house, on a street, in a town, in the UK, in the world. Like, it keeps going, and you're like, and that's my problem. That's what I'm worried about. Get a grip. So I find that one. Right, let me give you another one. I know that you're going to like this one. What would this moment mean to me on my deathbed?
It's probably a bit more you than me, this one, but I do... I think we can both relate, can't we? Do you know what is I've had a few people on LinkedIn, interestingly enough, reach out to me and say, how do I know if sales is the right job for me? And some people have rang me to ask me this as well. And we end up having a bit of a chat. And the question I ask for them is, when you're sat on your rocking chair at 18, 90 years old, and you look back at this point now that you're at in life, what would you have wanted for yourself in this moment? And they tend to probably usually pick a feeling rather than a thing that they would want to do. And I think that says a lot. Often it's less about the I'm wanting to do, it's the what would that make me feel.
I
just want to feel content. I just want to feel happy. Oh, that's interesting. You didn't say you'd just want to work in sales. So, and then we can kind of unpack from there around the feeling, because often I think the feeling precedes the outcome, the input.
We talk about it all the time, but like that death reminder, and I know that the Stoics said, "Remember, you will die before me." Don't come for me in the comments. But it's a case of like just use that. I like memento homo as well. You know that one. Well, they used
What's memento homo? Always be human.
No, someone, they used to whisper it to the men as they were going into war. Remember, you're just a man. So it's just like, remember, don't, I think the kind of the theory was like, don't think that you're invincible. Remember that, but you're just a man on this planet. And one day you'd.
I've actually, interesting that you bring that up. I've been reading, I'm sure you won't mind the shout out, Friedrich Nietzsche.
We'll put his,
human, all too human. I was told reliably by ChatGPT that this is the most accessible place to start. But I was just reading a thing then about, it's sort of got the cogs going a bit around human experience is enjoyed at its most when you're experiencing it with other people, right? So that makes sense, perfectly makes sense. So like, you enjoy sex more when you spot that the other person also enjoys sex with you and like, oh, I feel really bonded to this person, or like shared sorrow. Like, oh, I feel close, you know, because we're sharing
together.
Sorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
So what it was arguing was then that the things that motivate you are to keep that state in the community where things are shared, like shared experiences. So often what's driving you to disagree with each other is damaging that kind of shared enjoyment, that shared community enjoyment. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting, because when you look at some of the disagreements that are happening in the world, I mean, all the things that people are worried about, you can look at it through that lens and go, well, you're worried about that because there's a shared enjoyment to your community that will be damaged because of that. And you can look at things through that simple as it's a slight tangent, but I thought it was
no, I like that. It's the fear, and that's probably where the kind of the rebuttals come from in like war and conflict. I also, to go off on a tangent, I got one of my friends sent me this earlier.
I didn't send you anything.
One of my friends. And listen, let's see if you can name the person, name where the quote come from. You sensed that you should be following a different path, a more ambitious one. You felt that you were destined for other things, but you had no idea how to achieve them. And in your misery, you began to hate everything around you.
It sounds a bit Dostoevsky to me, that.
It was Chris Tarrant, actually.
No, it wasn't.
No, it was Dostoevsky. Well done.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I reckon that was James Coombs who sent you that.
Well done. We'll put his Instagram handle in the comments. But yeah, very good. Yeah, he sent me that. So that was nice. Right, I've got another one for you. And this one I hadn't heard before, and I heard it on a podcast recently, and I was like, oh, I like that's another reframing technique that I like. What if this was the 1,000th time this happened? To remove the novelty and therefore the drama of the situation. So I was thinking about it, and I was talking about it with my partner, and she's sometimes got a friend that will let her down last minute. And I said, well, what happened? What if that was just, that happened every day? And she was like, well, it does happen every time. And I was like, no, but like, if you take a situation that's annoying you, if like you missed the train or the train's delayed, if it's the 1,000th time that the train home is delayed, will you just get to the point of like, this is it. This is just the way it is. And if you can feel that way about that then, well, then why can't you feel it now in the present?
Mm. That's an interest. That actually makes me think of Seneca in his Letters from a Stoic. He's talking about how one of his friends, their life fell apart because their hometown burnt down. No hometown anymore to go back to. Total life fell apart. And he said, the problem with that person is they imagined their town would never burn down.
Mm.
The Stoic would imagine that the worst could happen and make peace with that. So I often think like the, you know, like people read Stoicism. I know this is not the Stoic podcast, but often people read Stoicism and think it's about being totally emotionless to everything. I think actually what it leads you to is either being really grateful or really indifferent.
Mm.
I think those are actually your two options in Stoicism. I think the like the train being late, being stuck in traffic, the friend letting you down. You can, an extreme example would be like, at least I have a friend and I like these doing these things when we're together. The 1,000th time it happened thing would be the indifference. Mm. Would be the I kind of expected that was one of the outcomes anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So whatever, I'm pretty
bring
cool.
It on. I'm just part of the river. Do you know what I mean? Just take me with you. You're going to like this one, and I know you're going to like it because we talk about it a lot. Is this useful? Is this true?
Yes, very, very good. I was actually thinking about that this morning with the what I think about a lot at the minute is, I've talked about it so much, but we are definitely losing the critical thinking ability. It's real information overload. And your brain, I was looking the other day, is at most, if you're the most rational person ever, you'll only spend 20% of your life being rational. So 80% of your life will be totally irrational. And things have a way of just seeping into your beliefs. You know, when we were kids, you probably knew, with that information being there, that it was all right to be gay. That it was all right. We're kind of in a generation that was like, pretty, like, it was all right. Yeah, like, yeah. It's fine. Don't worry about it. There might be like a bit of sniggering to be had in the playground or whatever. But then in the world we're in now, the information age, Andrew Tate or someone, they can just sneak in and just suddenly you're like, oh, I've kind of got a bit of their opinion there because I didn't put it through a critical thinking lens first. Mm. It's kind of become my hill to die on. But I haven't really done any research or really challenged it at all. I've just kind of let it in and let it become part of me. And with things like AI doom and stuff like that, you can quickly end up at an outcome where you're, this is my hill, I'm ready to die on this hill. This is my absolute opinion. I'm running it through that lens of, is this useful? Is this true? In that order will probably get you to a, actually, maybe I need to question this first. There's very few things that are true and probably even fewer things that are useful.
Yeah. And I definitely think for like salespeople who are in like a corporate environment, like you've got to really like use data. And we do it with our sales team, like, oh, it was low connect rate today, or I didn't have very many conversations. Mm. Like, is that true? First of all, well, let's look at the data. No, there you go. And also, is it true? Is it useful? Sorry. So it might be true, but what good does that do? Yeah. If you're problem solving, right, well, I need to adjust this, but then if it's not true, well, it's definitely not useful. I'll give you one more. And this is a really nice one to think about is, what if this is the most interesting part of the story? So reframing.
This is the most interesting part of the story.
Yeah, so reframing the chaos as plot development. You're in the dip, the setback, the humiliation. But what if this isn't the failure? What if this is the turning point, the bit you tell your grandkids about, the speech you'd give when you're finally successful, the dark night before the breakthrough?
Yeah, so there's all sorts of ways you can take this one. So I think your mind acts as, it's got these little consultant layers that are kind of like rapid fire consultants. One is comparison. I know it's light in this room because I also know what dark feels like. And my brain quickly figures that out, bit of snap of a second, figures it out, and then I understand the full picture. Yeah. The other thing, I was just listening to Jimmy Carr on Chris Williamson, and he was talking about, if your life was a film, the worst bit probably becomes the best bit of the film. It puts the rest of the film into context. Mm. And then they made another interesting point of, if you imagine your life as a film, what are people at home shouting out at you to do right now that you aren't doing?
Wow, I like that.
Oh, come on, just leave the job. Ask her out. Ask for the promote. Do that. You know, like the things that people would probably shout at you at this point in your life, probably the things that you should be doing.
That's really nice. I'm gonna listen to that one later. I think people think that we're so individual and we don't, like, we're the only ones going through it as well. So what if this is the most interesting part? But it's like, am I the only person that's ever gone through this? There's a, do you know the story of the mustard seed, the Buddhist story about the mustard seed?
Faith of a mustard seed.
Do you know that one?
No.
A woman's son dies and she goes to one of these monks and says, my son has died. He was only a young boy. Can you do anything? Can you bring him back to life? And he says, go to the local town and find a family who have not experienced death to give you a mustard seed and bring it back to me and I'll bring your son to life again. So she goes off, and then she comes back and he goes, have you got the mustard seed? She goes, no. And I think that the idea of that story is like, obviously there's no one out there that hasn't been affected by death in some way. But it's the same with problems. You think, all of your problems. Are you the first person to really experience this problem? No.
Exactly. There's an interesting thing about AI. I was listening to, he was a guest, the guy who wrote Thinking Fast and Slow. I think it's called Daniel Kahneman. He's dead now. Maybe it was a few years ago. They were talking, him and Lex Friedman. And he said a really interesting thing. I've been thinking about it all week. You know, when people go like, what's the difference between us and AI? Well, we have this ability to reason. There's like kind of this thought process behind the ideas and stuff that we come up with. And he was like, no. We have the ability to think we can reason. That's the difference.
Yeah.
You come up with a story. So you have the problem that you're talking about there, and you think that's unique to you because you've allowed yourself to think it's unique to you.
Yeah.
That's a little coding and reasoning that your computer system has put in the background for you. It's there to be rewired if you want it to be.
Yeah, exactly. Having those, like when I see like 11:11 or whatever time it is, I shout, life's good, motherfucker. Having those little rules or those little bits where you say, actually, this is here, so what am I going to do now? I automatically ask myself that question, is this useful? Is this true? And if you start to like bring these in, we know about habits and building habits, eventually you can look at things from a completely different lens so you can choose your outlook. I've really enjoyed this, Zach Thompson. Go on, sorry.
I'll give you a closing thought. There's a thing I wrote down the other day about, you know, agency comes up a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, high agency, having agency in life. Just ending on that point there, I wrote down a thing the other day. Agency is creating the path, not waiting for one. I think of this idea that if you aren't an active participant, life will be chosen for you.
Yeah. Are you an NPC?
It will be picked for you. Exactly. So that idea then of like, I'm the only person, I'm the one who experienced, it's so unique to me, I'm the work, like that has been picked for you. But you can also unpick it and not be just auto-subscribed into things you don't want to be.
There's another path. I'd love this. Mr. Thompson, it's always a pleasure to talk life and shop with you. Any tasks this week? I saw somebody post a photo of a shoe the other week, which I thought was brilliant. They got paid their hard-earned money.
Yeah. They got paid. If you've got to the end of the episode and you want to have a prize, write a review of the book, Sales is Therapy, on Amazon, a glowing endorsement. Please screenshot it and send it over to me. Each person who does it, I will send over.
Don't be too generous.
No, I think message me, because what I'll send over, it might shock you. I probably can't say it on the podcast.
Okay, I like that. Right, love you. Bye.
Love you, bye, mate.